Welcome to the In the Bag podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Slaughter, from an absolutely gorgeous Houston, Texas today. And with me, as always, is Jazzy, James Haldeman. How you doing, buddy?
Had better days, had worse days, but we're here doing a podcast, and I'm going to talk about betting on some golf, so can't beat it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was playing golf right now. I feel like I'm in your neck of the woods. It is 75 and cloudless.
So it's just a perfect day for golf.
It is absolutely amazing. It's supposed to be like that this weekend, too, and it's like, I've never worn, I mean, you can see me, I'm wearing long sleeves in September. It's very strange. So I don't think it's ever been this quite cold in September since I've been alive.
We're actually in the midst of a heat wave still. It's like, you know, 87 to 90 all week this week in Berkeley. Climate change isn't real, though. I'm going to keep saying that during the first section of every podcast, apparently.
Well, we like to talk about the weather.
That's what happens when we open it with weather. We got to talk about it. Yeah. So it is. Yeah, I'm hopefully going to play this weekend because I have... what's the name of the place they play the PGA Championship at? TPC Harding Park, coming up in 2 weeks, and I haven't played for about a month, so I'm going to go try and get my game in shape in one round so I don't get dominated next Saturday.
Nice. Yeah, I think it may be this weekend. My friend has a free pass to play at Tour 18 for a group of four.
Oh, nice.
And I think the second hole is is at... oh God! What's that like? That long par four at Bay Hill with like all the water on the left.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just, like the wraps around, and I'm like, I'm gonna hit it in the water like so many times. But
well, you are if you okay. Think that way. You can't see the water. That's like,
I need to. The water is John Cena. so, but yeah. But either way, but it should be fun. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'll let you know what my score is if it's below like a 110.
Yeah, I have faith.
Either way, we had a fun tournament last weekend. An absolutely beautiful tournament. I convinced Julie that we should go there for something. I don't know what. Perhaps like post having a child or something.
A baby moon, if you will.
What is it? Yeah, baby. That's what they call it. I didn't know that was like an actual thing, but apparently it is.
I think you're supposed to do it before the baby, right?
Yes.
So you're, right. You're just doing it a little backwards. It's fine.
Yeah, we could do it before. It doesn't really matter to me. I mean, it looks like it's always nice at the Corrales Puntaka Resort.
Well, what I'm saying is it might be tough to get there in our current world situation.
Yes. Either way, you know, I think Hudson Swafford may be good at golf, and I'm glad that he went out there and he won a tournament. He was like the best player from start to finish, in my opinion. He started strong, and he finished good enough to to hold everyone off, and that that birdie on the final par three there on 17 was just an absolutely clutch shot, and I was just happy for him to win, and especially holding off someone of Mackenzie Hughes's caliber, because Mackenzie Hughes is probably a top three talent wise in this tournament.
Yeah, I thought his putt on 17 was impressive, and then it took he had to make an 8-foot par putt on 18 to not go into the playoff with Tyler McCumber, who we should give some credit to as well. He played a great tournament. And it was weird. He left a putt 8 feet short, and I felt like his speed on the greens was excellent all week. So you knew the nerves were getting to him a little bit. And then he stepped up, knocked down that putt, got his first win since I think 2017, which is awesome for him. I know, yeah, you've mentioned him a few times, and kind of, is Hudson Swafford good at golf? I think he is, and he kind of, showed us that he is, and had a really solid tournament last week. I think this is, we've talked about it before, this is a really fun time of the year when it's not big names winning every tournament, and these guys are kind of making their careers, right? Now he has exemption for 3 more years on the tour, and gets to play in some majors, and it's great when we get to see these guys win these sorts of tournaments.
Yeah, and I think you kind of learn a little bit about these guys that you just don't normally get to see on the big stage, what their, what their mindset is, how they play under pressure. And, for the most part, they haven't really done that probably since college or on the Korn Ferry Tour. And, someone like, Woolsey is a little bit different because he's obviously a young up-and-coming guy. But a lot of these guys, they did win on the Korn Ferry as well, so... But I had fun watching it. I didn't get to catch as much of it as I normally do. particularly when almost every one of my guys in my best lineup shot over par on the final day, which ruined a pretty spectacular run I was having. So
it all comes together. That's how it works. You gotta take your lumps. You gotta lose to the Detroit Pistons a few times, and then your lineups all pop, and you're Michael Jordan, right? That's how it works. And we're gonna talk about lineup construction this week as you guide me on this new quest we're going on the pod. But I think, you know, the general goal needs to be to build a core that you like and has potential, right? You can't have six guys going out missing the cut. That's rough. But as long as you're hanging around four or five guys, or, you know, every now and then you have a roster that hits all six, and maybe you hit it that week, maybe you don't. But as long as you're staying in that range and staying consistent with that, your lineups are just going to pop eventually. Eventually you're going to have a day, a Sunday like I did at the Safeway, where everybody shoots, you know, minus two or better in your six-person lineups, and you're going to have a big weekend. You just kind of got to stick with it, I guess. But the lineup, the weekends where everybody shoots like two over par on Sunday sucks.
You know, it is what it is. Nonetheless, I think we, you know, again, this is not like last weekend where, you know, well, one thing that's kind of frustrating about this tournament is that they don't use the track data. And so it's kind of hard for us to determine, you know, who's playing well was like an admiration versus who's playing well we think was good. We kind of had to watch it to figure it out, but nonetheless, a lot of these guys that played here this weekend will be at the tournament this weekend at Sanderson Farms. So you know, we do have some analysis to move forward here. Guys like, you know, clubbing up, of course, to be Hudson Swafford, who, you know, is now $1,000 more on DraftKings. You know, they've taken his win very seriously. Tyler, like you already mentioned, Tyler McCumber. Nate Lashley had a really awesome Saturday. And I thought he was going to make a run on Sunday, but he kind of stalled out there at the end. And Adam Long was really awesome on Friday and Saturday, but just didn't have it on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But he's been in a couple tournaments since the reboot. So I think, you know, he's playing really good golf right now. So there's a lot of these young guys that are playing well. And I don't really want to talk about the bad too much. Was there anyone that particularly like disappointed you, or you thought they would play better? I have one particular person, but that's all I got.
I mean, I think the one name that probably should continue to pop up in these conversations right now, and I think he's obviously a talented golfer, but isn't displaying it right now. I don't think he does in these, you know, easier type tournaments where you have to make a ton of birdies. Is Corey Connors? He's missed what, four out of seven cuts now, including the last two tournaments. Again, I'm not really going to hold the U.S. Open against anybody. That was a dog of a course. You know, he missed the cut at Corrales. He missed it at Wyndham. He missed it at the PGA Championship. And he hasn't had a finish, I think, better than like 25th in his last seven or eight tournaments. He missed the cut here at Sanderson Farms last year. So Corey Connors is the only guy I'm worried about coming into this week. But outside of that, I don't have a lot of negative to spread around right now.
Yeah, and you know, I don't really feel like railing on these guys whenever they're fighting for their lives out here. You know, my only one is Will Gordon. You know, he didn't make the cut. He ended up being my highest owned golfer, so I'm very good at whatever my highest owned golfer is being the worst player that I choose that weekend. But it is truly an amazing, I don't know if you would call it a talent, but it seems like it is at this point.
Correlation does not equal causation.
It happens more often than you would think. And, I did have one thing I wanted to talk about because I laughed so hard whenever I heard it. I was watching the telecast, I think it was Saturday evening, and they like panned to like Emiliano Grillo, and they're showing him putting or something there. And they were talking about how he's like working with his swing coach to get back to his ball striking that he had been, you know, in the years past. And I'm like, still, like, Grillo's still like pretty close to an elite ball striker. I'm like, wait, he needs to be working on his putting. And it's like ridiculous that he thinks that, like, his mindset is, well, I need to be a better ball striker.
I mean,
what are you doing, bro?
I mean, I guess you think if maybe he's just trying to hit it closer to give himself easier putts. I don't know. It doesn't make that much sense to me. I mean, you said he's almost an elite ball striker. I mean, you look at, you know, strokes gained stats for ball striking. He's probably in the top 20 on tour. I mean, that definitely qualifies him as elite. So that, I love that. That's pretty funny.
I don't know why that stuck out to me. I think it was funny. Like, they had just panned off of, like, Luke List, like, missing, like, a 2-footer. You know, he missed it, and it was, like, 5 feet further than, like, you know, where he shot. You know, people who can't putt drive me crazy. Anyway, so this weekend we got the Sanderson Farms. It's a par 72. It's in, is it Alabama, Mississippi?
Jackson.
Two, right?
Jackson, Mississippi.
And what do we got about the course, James?
Yeah, so this is another longish par 72. So we're going to have guys that are going to be able to take advantage of the par 5s, take advantage of their length. This isn't a course where a lot of fairways are hit, so it kind of sets up as a second shot course. The rough isn't particularly thick either. So, you know, we're going to be looking for guys that are going to play well in their approach. And I would favor length versus accuracy off the tee. Not that length is a prerequisite for winning. If you look at, you know, past champs, Sebastian Munoz is kind of long. Cam Champ is obviously very long. But the guys that were winning the years before them aren't. So I don't think being long is a prerequisite, but I think we're going to favor that over fairways just because they're tough to hit in general. Around the green game, they're about tour average for getting up and down. And as far as putting, we're going to want guys that can get hot with the putter here. Winning scores tend to get pretty low. And I think it was Brent Snedeker had a quote that was circulating around saying that it tends to turn into a putting contest here at Sanderson Farm. So we definitely want guys that can get hot with the putter. You know, we have a lot of, the top four coming back from last year for sure. And, you know, Munoz won, beat Sungjae Im in a playoff with like a 25-foot bomb putt. It was awesome. Benny Ahn finished third, and then Carlos Ortiz, course horse. This is your course horse for the week if you want one. Third and fourth in the last 2 years. So it'll be a fun tournament. I'm glad we have a couple bigger names in the field. Scotty Scheffler's back after his positive COVID test. We get Sungjae Im back. And, you know, Munoz has turned himself into a big name. He's been playing great as of late. And then, you know, Burns, Redmond, Long, all these guys have been playing solid over the last few weeks. So should be a fun tournament. I'm definitely looking forward to it. It's a cool course. It's a fun course with water, you know, thinner fairways, you know, provides you with some opportunity to take irons off the tee instead of drivers. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, I think last year, this was kind of the course, or this was the tournament that really made us think it's like, hey, like, you know, maybe we can like actually do this, because we were both on Munoz 66-1 odds. And I mean that, and it was just fun. I was sitting at a bar watching, like, you know, the NFL games, and I made them turn it on to like the golf playoff in the middle of football Sunday and watch the Munoz M playoff. And it was, it was just a blast. So this kind of, I think this tournament will probably always hold a special spot for that, you know, for that particular
Munoz's purpose. Odds aren't quite as good this year.
Yeah. That's all right. We'll find another one.
We'll find another one. We always do.
I do kind of have one in mind the more that I kind of look at this, but yeah, let's get into it. So,
but you have to listen to the entire podcast to get to the end to hear our betting picks.
is that the old what do they call that?
A little teaser.
A little teaser, yeah, the radio teaser. So I think this weekend, you know, or for this week, I think we'll just do kind of like the process that James and I usually go through when trying to discuss how we want to build our lineups, because I don't know, just feel like doing something different. Maybe this works, maybe it doesn't, but I feel like it's kind of informative as we go through and talk about this to kind of be like, these are the guys I like in this section, and, you know, maybe I can pivot to this guy or pivot to that guy, trying to factor in how much risk to put in a lineup versus safety, and stuff like that. So let's just get started. We'll start at the top, because I think there are three guys in particular that I'd just, you know, I'm trying to figure out if I can fit two of the three in. I'm not sure that I can, but I'm definitely starting my lineup with one of Scheffler, Munoz, or Burns. How do you feel about that?
I'm doing the 25 cent 20 entry and the $1 20 entry this week, and I'm starting one set of those lineups because I think you know, regardless of what you're playing, you want to have 40 unique lineups to give you the best opportunity to pop. I'm starting one of those sets with Scottie Scheffler. I'm starting the other set with Sam Burns. So you'll get no argument from me if those are the directions you want to go. And then, you know, Munoz has been, like I said, has been great as of late. 18th, 8th, and 8th after he started 20th in the Tour Championship. So he's really been popping as of late. And then, you know, also made the cut at a difficult US Open. Made the cut here all three times, including, you know, winning it last year. So I think Munoz is a great option to go to. And I think he's probably a solid pivot from the other two guys. They're going to be two of the highest owned golfers this week.
And it seems like he just plays well at this particular time of year.
Yep.
I mean, also, he finished 8th at East Lake, right? So,
yep.
So he had a top 10, you know, for the whole PGA last year.
That's what I'm saying. And he finished better than that score to aggregate, right? Because he started that tournament like 20th.
Right. Or probably even lower. So I think he was like one of the final few guys in.
Yeah, so he really popped.
So then from there, I mean, we could talk about why there's other guys in that particular area we don't like. I mean, but I feel like, I guess it's kind of interesting. I wonder if Oosthuizen was still in the tournament, if it would have made a difference for what kind of difference it would have made for all the ownership. I assume that he would have dragged guys mostly away from Scheffler because of the expensiveness, but now people probably are more willing to buy up on him or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Usti's really been popping. He's finished top 33 in all of his last five tournaments. And so, you know, it's a bummer that he's not playing. But I think he's definitely would have eaten up some of Scheffler's ownership and probably some of Sungjae's as well. But, you know, maybe not. I don't know exactly where people would have gone in that particular case.
Right. No, I'm with you on that. Another reason, I mean, both, I think one of the reasons I very much like starting with either Munoz or Burns, I mean, I like Scheffler too, but they've shown the ability to make the cut here, and you just get, you know, $1,500 more to play with at the bottom. And I don't, you know, in these longer, or, you know, in these tournaments with the more guys you don't know, I just don't like going to the bottom of the barrel unless I find a course horse like Kelly Kraft. So,
God, Kelly Kraft shout out on the pod.
I mean, what a lifesaver. But yeah, so unless I find someone like that I really love, I don't like to dip down in these types of tournaments. So I feel like I tried to go with the more balanced approach, and that ended up being a workable lineup for me last weekend. But you know, there is a guy like Hudson Swafford that can win a tournament at 6,700. You definitely have better chances with those long odd guys to win in a tournament like this.
Yeah, I think you also want those sorts of guys that have long odds, but you know have the potential to pop. And we know Hudson Swafford won in 2017, so we know he has that capability. Fun fact, he missed his next three cuts, so maybe we don't play Hudson Swafford this week. I want to go with a balanced lineup this week. So when I started a lot of my lineups with Sam Burns, and I was able to fit Redmond as my second guy in those lineups, you know, going down. So I'm pretty high on Doc Redmond, two top three finishes in his last three starts, which is phenomenal. But as you pointed out, like, this is another conversation you have to have. Do you want to have a boom or bust, you know, type guys? And I think you want to have that high variance of finishes, right? Yeah, like maybe Doc Redmond is going to lose three strokes because his ball striking just isn't there this week, and he's not going to go gain 10 strokes with the putter. But if his ball striking's there, he's going to gain 8-9 strokes because that's how good at it he is. And so, so that's kind of where I am.
I think Doc Redmond is a guy that I would like some exposure to, but not to like make a part of my base, because I think he's just very risky and whether or not he's make the cut. I mean, he's made the cut. I mean, he made the cut here. He finished 52nd here last year, but like, none of these guys are guarantees to make the cut, first of all. But second of all, I just think out of all these guys in this range, outside of probably Binion, I think that he is the other guy that's, like, the most likely to miss the cut.
Yeah. I mean, there's volatility in Doc Redmond's game. There's no doubt about that. He finished 52nd here last year, but it's a different Doc Redmond now. than I think that guy was then.
He is better this year. He's definitely improved. I think I like sticking him with like someone like Burns, or even making him maybe the top guy in my lineup and going with someone like Adam Long or something, where a little bit of a safer option, as opposed to pairing him with a Munoz or a Sungjae or a Binion or something like that.
Sure, that's fair.
So my next guy, so outside of starting with this top three, one of these guys in the top three, the guy that I know that I want to make the staple of my lineup is Cameron Tringali. I have him circled on my list. I think he fits everything that you want to do at this particular tournament. And I don't love a lot of these cheaper guys. So he was easily my favorite one out of there. I don't think you weren't as high on Tringali as I am, but you didn't hate that, right?
No, I'm playing him as I'm doing the Rick Rungood model construction lineup, where you know you take your core six and you insert three guys, different guys for each of your roster, and that's how you create your space or your, you know, your I guess your variance in your rosters, your exposure to guys. And I have Tringali in some of those lineups replacing Christopher Ventura. So I have exposure to Tringali. He's just, you know, he's not my number one guy there, but he's definitely in like the top three or four in that range for me for sure.
So, and then if I want to go to the middle, so what I'm trying to do is trying to find the best lineup for the best six golfers I have. So let me pull up DraftKings. I'll do it on my phone because my screen's kind of crazy right now. And that leaves me with, if I go Burns, Cousin Burns, and Tringali, then I think that's a good start. I'm not overextending myself. I can go higher than Burns if I want to, but it's not, you know, it's not necessary.
Right.
So what... but the thing is, I don't know, you went lower than someone like Tringali, right? Who are some guys that you liked that were like in kind of like the bottom of, you know, of like what you would consider your build?
There are only really two guys that I wanted to play down here, and they're both 6,700. So Adam Shanks made his last five cuts, or sorry, and last so, eight cuts. And so,
he's a safe guy.
Yeah.
And he's fair at putting, and he's a decent ball striker.
Correct. Yeah, he's a tour average iron player. He's, you know, 0.28 off the tee and 0.12 putting. And I don't understand why a guy who's made eight straight cuts is priced down here, because that's generally not what you're getting. And then the other guy I'm playing down here is Davis Riley. His only start was, I believe, the U.S. Open recently on the PGA Tour. Yeah. But he has two wins in like his last 15 Korn Ferry Tour tournaments, and he finished 39th here last year. He's a local guy, he's familiar with the area. And so, you know, from 6,700, like we talked about, we want guys who have the ability to win from the space and at least pop in the tournament. And so I think Davis Riley is a unique opportunity that that gives you that. And then something interesting that I think, again, it might have been Rick said, you know, like this year, nobody lost their tour card and there was no Korn Ferry graduation because of COVID. And so I think that the lines between who is the, you know, 125th best golfer on the PGA Tour look, and blurring those lines with who the best players are on the Korn Ferry Tour right now, like if Davis Riley would have got his tour card, which he would have, is he not like maybe the 80th best player on the PGA Tour and he's just priced really low right now? So I think those lines are blurred, and the fact that he can win against guys that I consider are probably good enough to be on the PGA Tour right now gives me some hope at 6,700, makes me like him a lot.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think all that stuff is true. So I'm not as confident. If there was a guy that I was going to dip down to, I think it would be my boy Will Gordon from, you know, despite last weekend, because I trust his talent. I like the fact that he's a good ball striker, which I think at $7,100 is hard to find. And also, I know he hasn't won, but he's been in the finals of Sundays where he's been in the top 10, and he's shown the ability to compete there. So, and he's done it recently. So I think I like that.
Yeah, I think game theory aspect, a lot of people are going to be mad at him for missing the cut last week.
Right, because he was the most popular guy.
Right.
So I do expect him to bounce back too. The next guy that I think that I like and that would be my third most favorite golfer, I think that you talked me into him, is Dennis McCarthy.
Dennis McCarthy, not Denny. Okay. I didn't realize how close you and Dennis were.
No, well, so you know why I was thinking this, and it's so silly. I was watching golf yesterday, or not golf. I was watching tennis yesterday, and there's this guy. I can't think of what his last name is anymore, but his first name is Tennis, TENNYS, and I'm like, but I think it's like pronounced like Tinnies or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, how can you not bet on that guy to win the freaking tennis match? His name is the game.
Oh my god.
So that's what I was thinking about.
This is who I take my tennis betting plays from, by the way.
Did it win?
It did win.
All right. So I
wasn't even a sweat.
So I think McCarthy is my third favorite guy. You talked me into him. He's the best. He's obviously the best putter for this tournament.
And on the PGA Tour.
And and on the PGA Tour. I think what's his face? I think Mackenzie Hughes could give him a run for his money.
Strokes gained data don't lie, baby. He's led the tour the last 2 years.
He's on that Jason Day run.
He is on the Jason Day run.
So I think I like Dennis McCarthy, or Denny McCarthy. I think also, but there are other guys that, like, he's the pivot from Cam Davis, Patrick Rogers. He's kind of in that range for me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I kind of liked Hadley. I kind of like Straka, but I think McCarthy provides the best value because he's playing really well right now. He finished 7th and 18th the last 2 years here. You just know what you're going to get from him. So I don't know. I'm thinking that he's my third like lock for my lineup.
Yeah, I mean, his iron play has also been a lot better recently. So I think that's solid. When you say you know what we're getting from him, he gained 10 strokes putting 2 years ago when he finished 7th here, and when he finished 18th he was just really solid across the board. So and gained strokes everywhere. So I think Denny McCarthy, or Dennis, I don't mean to insult your friend there, is a really good play this week. And I think you actually talked me into him over Hadley. You say I talked you into him, but you talked me into him as well. So I think the one place we differ in our lineup construction tendencies is I want more risk. And so the way I'm looking at this each week is I'm not looking at this to make like 30 cents per lineup each week. Either all my lineups are going to be great, or maybe everybody just misses the cut. But I want to give myself the best opportunity to maximize that everybody does great sort of thing. So when we talk about like who's safe, I'm not worried about who's safe as much, even though I'm playing Adam Schenck this week. Maybe I should just, and I think I'm doing it because I'm taking so much risk up top. Maybe I should just be playing Davis Riley for the high ceiling. But I think Schenck's ceiling is relatively high as well because he has a better chance of making the cut than everybody else around him. But I'm always looking for those ceilings and guys that can potentially pop. And so, that's part of the reason I like McCarthy. I think his putter can get really hot in a putting contest.
So here's my thing with that. And maybe I think for these particular tournaments, I do feel like almost any guy that's like above like a certain level, I think can win this tournament. Like there's not a reason to me that like Matthias Schaub, throwing a random name out there, can't go win this tournament.
Yeah, sure.
Like everyone gets their, not everyone, but you know, people, like random people get their first wins. Like, or random people go 10 years with, you know, in between wins. So like Michael Thompson. So,
right.
I mean, to me, like for instance, Michael, there's never in a million years, 10 years ago or today, that I would have chosen Michael Thompson to win that tournament.
Right, but somebody does.
But somebody does. But I think my point is that everyone has, like, they all have the ability to win these types of tournaments.
Sure, sure.
Because the talent difference just isn't, like, so drastic that it's like, you know, I agree in the U.S. Open, there's like 15 people that can win. But I just don't know if you're like giving up that much like risk of winning by like going Davis Riley over Adam Schenk. Like Adam Schenk could win the tournament.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. I see what you're saying. I agree with that. I guess so, my point is at the top of the list, right? When we're talking about, you were talking about like wanting, being worried about Doc Redman missing the cut. I'm not worried about that. If Doc Redman misses the cut, Doc Redman misses the cut, and I'm out $20, and we'll come wipe our hands, and we'll come back, and we'll do it again next week, and we'll see who we can win. Because like, I think trying to piece together like, you know, 30 cent per lineup wins or like dollar per lineup wins is like really, really hard to do, especially in the model that I do with that cascading model. So I think either all of my lineups are going to hit and all of my lineups are going to miss, and I'm going to, you know, live with the consequences. Luckily I hit 2 weeks ago, so I have a lot of time to hit again. And you know, and I want that graph to look like, so it's like blackjack betting, right? When you're counting cards and you like have these like variances that are small and sometimes you lose a lot, but you know, eventually if you're playing the right odds and what we're assuming is that we're good enough at this to locate the skill sets that are needed to win these golf tournaments, right? And that's the advantage we're giving ourselves versus everybody else that plays DraftKings or versus the betting market. And so, yeah, I might take some dips for, you know, 3 weeks. I might just, you know, miss on everybody, but eventually I'm going to hit that big week and I'm going to have my $700, $800, you know, $1,500 week. And then that's going to, you know, be that big gain. And that's what we're looking for. And at least that's what I'm looking for in the way I'm playing these DraftKings lineups and the bets I'm making, right? That's why we hit Munoz at 66-1 last year.
Right. Well, so, all right. So let me ask you this. So my thing with this, so the next pick in this particular lineup, so I have Burns, McCarthy, Tringali. The next pick, I want to, I think the best route to go is to fill in the, if I'm going to go above Burns or below Burns. Like, am I going to go with someone that's like 9,200 or am I going to go all the way up to Scheffler or Munoz? So guys that I have targeted in this particular range are, you like Redmond. Adam Long has been good recently. Zach Johnson has shown some something lately, and he finished 14th here last year.
Right.
I don't know what to think about it, but I think he makes a lot of sense here, actually, the more I'm looking at him. And I like his ownership here is Brian Harman. He's finished 27th, 11th, 12th, 38th, and he finished 14th here last year.
Mm-hmm. He's been in good form.
So I kind of like that as well. You know, and then Fratelli is also quite talented, and he finished sixth here last year.
So, also in good form. Hasn't played for a while, but in good form in the tournaments he has played.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of guys here. What do you think? I mean, who do you think provides that upside that we're looking for?
So I think it depends on where you want to go with the rest of your lineup, right? So you can, if you go below Burns, I think you can now live in that mid 800 or 8,000s area with like Carlos Ortiz, Patrick Rogers, Cam Davis.
Okay, so I think, so this decision about Scheffler or, you know, what we're going to do here. So ultimately, my problem with, it's not really a problem, but what I see happening with Scheffler is I think you can fit Scheffler and Burns and Scheffler and Munoz in lineups, but that means you avoid the 8,000 range entirely, which I got to be honest with you, the more I look at the 8,000 range, it doesn't really entice me all that much. 8,000 range includes guys like Stenson, Griot, Colley, Sergio, Pat Perez, Siwoo Kim, Carlos Ortiz, Rogers, Cam Davis, Lucas Glover, and Zhang. Now, I think it's very obviously very possible that one of these guys wins the tournament. But, you know, outside of Rogers, Cam Davis, I do like Zhang's form, and he finished 14th. But he finished 60th here last year, so not an amazing run there. So I don't know. To me, I think I'm almost thinking that I may want to start with Scheffler, and I also think Scheffler maybe. So there's two thoughts behind this. One, I think his ownership may be a little bit lower than what it's projected on here, and two, I think that he's by far and away the most talented golfer. And typically, let's say if this was like a major tournament and you were like, even whenever, let's say like when Bryson was like tearing it up, right? He wasn't 11-4.
Right.
Or, you know, he was, you know, they're typically higher than that. They're almost like 12,000 if they're like, if there's this enormous gap. And to me, between Scheffler going all the way down to him, I mean, that's crazy. And it's, and he's only 11-4. So I'm actually leaning towards starting my lineups more with Scheffler and working my way down. And I think, you know, either the three guys I'd be targeting, I think, would be Munoz, Burns, and then maybe I dip all the way down to someone like Fratelli, who I know has some top-end talent and has the ability to win, despite the fact that he hasn't won. Also, another thing about Scheffler is he's got to win a tournament sometime. You know, he's got to be...
Yeah, why not one where he's by far the best player?
Right. And, I mean, I think he, you know, obviously I think everyone wants to win, but I mean, I think, like, all the other young guys have won. And I think, you know, he thinks in his head, he's probably like, I got to keep up with all of them. So I think this is, I don't know. We obviously don't know what type of golf he's been playing, but I can't not play him the more I think about it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I said, I did 40 lineups. I did one where I stacked one set where Redmond and Burns were my stack at the top, and I had a pretty balanced sort of lineup. I dipped down to Shank for that one, and then I did one where I stacked Scheffler and Redmond, although maybe you've talked me into Burns with some pre-podcast talk instead of Redmond in that stack, and then played Keith Mitchell, who's someone we haven't talked to. Who is the other guy down low I like at 6,600? If it's Bermuda grass, we play Keith Mitchell, so... That is what it is. And I stacked Mitchell with Shank down at the bottom to create that flexibility to do that in my lineup. So I think there are ways to do it. I think going with Scheffler as your top guy and another, you know, high 9,000s guy is a really solid look, because I like you said, Scheffler is by far the best player in the tournament. I don't have any problem with going that direction.
Yeah, I think
I did it myself.
Yeah, I think that's more what I'm leaning towards. And the more that I look at it, there are more guys in the, like, you've talked me into Mitchell. I think Shank is a safe choice. Riley, I like his top-end talent. And then Hubbard is another guy I like where mm-hmm. he pops in these types of tournaments. I'm not sure that he has the ability to win this tournament, but I think he's a very good golfer, and I think he's severely underpriced in this field. And his ownership is looking pretty solid as well.
Yeah, I think because you specifically like lower tier guys, higher, like Tringali is the second guy you wanted on your roster. You also like, Will Gordon this week, both of us do, as a game theory aspect, and I think he's got good, he's a really good golfer. And so being that you like those two guys down there, I think, you know, starting Scheffler is a great place to be, along with, you know, Redmond, Burns, Fratelli, Harman, wherever you decide to go long, because you're going to be able to have some flexibility going down there to those bottom 7,000s and definitely liking guys there.
So what do you think about this? I think I've maybe have pivoted off of Tringali because your speech about having guys that can win the tournament really motivated me. And I'm not sure. I mean, has Tringali won a tournament? I'm not even sure about that. He definitely has.
I'm not sure if he's the winner on the tour.
He
popped in a couple early tournaments last year.
Yeah, but I think,
to his credit.
But what about someone who's actually won a tournament and then kind of fits this mold of can get really hot with the putter and destroy people with it in this particular range?
Sure.
JT Poston.
Yeah, and he's made four cuts here in his four appearances, 11th last year. His form is a little worrisome coming into this, but, I mean, he showed last year at the Wyndham, right, when he outdueled Webb Simpson at Webb Simpson's daughter's home course, that he can get hot, and when he gets hot ball striking, that means he doesn't make mistakes. He went, 54 holes, or did he go all 72 without a bogey?
He didn't have a bogey.
Yeah, it was all 72. I don't hate Poston if you're looking for someone that can get hot with the putter. I think he's a solid pivot down there, and I think he'll provide you with the amount of flexibility in your lineups to go with Scotty Scheffler at the top. Plus, he gains strokes off the tee, and that's not something you can say for everybody that we consider a quote-unquote bad ball striker.
Yeah, so this is kind of what I've come up with, and I'm flexible, obviously, at the bottom of my lineup, but I'm thinking my core six here, Scheffler, Fratelli, Denny McCarthy, Poston, Gordon, and then one of Hubbard, Riley, or Mitchell, or Shank. But that kind of grouping.
That's a good lineup. I think you're getting the best player in the field. And I know Sung J.M. is good, but he's not better than Scotty Scheffler. I think we both agree on that.
For sure.
At this point, although I'm sure there are people that would disagree with us. I think you're getting another really good player out of the 9,000s. And you went Fratelli, right?
Yeah,
and Fratelli. Fratelli with top-end talent. He's won a tournament before. I think you get that guy that can get really, really hot with the putter or is just a solid putter all the time, makes a lot of birdies in Denny McCarthy. And I think your bottom guys can provide you maybe some win equity. And we know Poston can, and whoever you go with at the bottom probably can as well. So I think that's a really, really solid lineup.
I'm liking this. And then you can pivot with Fratelli to Burns and go, I do like the Scheffler-Burns combination, but I'm worried a little bit about how thin it gets there at the bottom. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, so you had the Scheffler construction. Did you go with two top-heavy guys whenever you were building your Scheffler construction? Or what? Walk me through what you did.
Yeah, I'm Scheffler-Redmond as the core of that top of that lineup. Okay. And I left myself some flexibility. I was also able to play a lineup with Burns and a lineup with Munoz. So I had about $400 left over with that lineup that I was able to spend up on a little bit. I went with Cam Davis. So here's my, I'm going to give a little Cam Davis spiel here. Since the restart, only two players have gained one stroke per round on the field and have done it by gaining strokes across all four categories. And that's Cam Davis and Sam Burns. So every roster I wanted to start with, you know, I wanted Cam Davis and Sam Burns to be a huge part of it, despite the projected ownership we're seeing from them being really, really high. So I went Cam Davis. Like I said, I dipped down a little bit for Keith Mitchell and Adam Shank in those rosters. And I think I went with I've picked someone at 72, Christopher Ventura for the last guy in those lineups.
Okay.
And so a lot of really good putters, some guys that can get hot and make a ton of birdies.
Yeah, so Ventura's pretty interesting because he was 9,200 last week. This week he's 7,200. Enormous drop. He didn't play terrible. He didn't play well, but he surely didn't play terrible.
Yeah, he made a cut.
And he has, I mean, Christopher Ventura is going to win a golf tournament at some point in his career. I don't think it's going to happen this weekend. I'd be surprised just because he's not in amazing form. He's in okay form, but
he's in fine form.
Yeah, I guess so. It's
not phenomenal.
1937th, seventh, which is obviously great, and 52nd last weekend. He kind of seemed like all over the place last weekend for sure.
Yeah, he made a lot of bogeys last weekend, and not as many birdies as he usually does. He's I make a decent number of birdies and don't make mistakes usually, right? Like so, Safeway Open, for example, like he. He's not a great iron player yet. He can get hot with his irons and his wedges, but he's not a great approach player yet. And so at Safeway, he was in the mix.
Yeah.
I think he was in one of the last three groups, right? He might have been in Sam Burns.
He was in the last group. I think he was winning. I think he was in the last group.
And so he just couldn't make a birdie. He made like 14 straight pars to start the tournament because he couldn't hit the ball close enough.
Right.
Where like Emiliano Grillo had the opposite problem. He was hitting the ball to 10 feet and just couldn't make a putt.
Right.
And where, you know, Ventura was trying to make 25 footers in every hole and couldn't do it. So he is the kind of guy that when his wedges get hot, he's going to make putts. You're right. I mean, this is a second shot course. If I'm relying on Ventura's irons, maybe I'm not going to win, but I think he's going to go out and make me a cut and at least potentially give me that equity.
Would you think, all right, so between let's say I'm fumbling around here with Gordon, Ventura, Tringali, maybe that's like my three guys in this like pivot area. Which one of those guys do you think provides the highest win equity?
Can I cop out and say Ventura or Gordon? I just think they have elite talent. Well, maybe not elite talent off the tee. I think Gordon has elite talent off the tee. Ventura, not so much. But Ventura has an elite talent with the putter, where I don't think I mean, Tringali's a really good iron player, but he's streaky. I just think they have really, really elite skills that Tringali doesn't have and doesn't bring as consistently as they do.
Right. Well, I mean, that is true. So, I mean, like, they're all kind of... See, to me, I think I'm with you. I think Tringali... I don't even know if he has the highest floor of them all, but I don't think his win equity is the highest either. But Ventura is obviously significantly better. I mean, Ventura is like a Brent Snedeker level putter, and as much as I hate the way that Brent Snedeker puts the ball form wise, he is a very good putter. He's like a top 15 to 20 putter, you know, in the tour. So that's like elite.
Yeah.
I think Will Gordon is not an elite. He, like, you know, it's hard to be elite off the tee unless you're like a top 10 player in the world. But I mean, for this, he's definitely like in the top five of the best off the tee players. So, you know, that's something I can like stick a feather in my cap and say, like, you know, I have that. So I'm almost kind of leaning towards one of those two guys as being in my main build as opposed to Tringali.
I think that's right. I mean, I think you just kind of have to pick what you're looking for this week. Each of those three guys provides you something different. Tringali is a better iron player than the other two. Will Gordon's better off the tee than the other two. And Christopher Ventura is a much better putter than the other two. Decide what you want to go with and play it that way. It's hard down in this range. You know, it's fun because we get to talk about, you know, we actually get to sort of like, you know, scrutinize the bottom of these price ranges because there are good players here now that the tournaments have gotten a little bit better than they have been, but I guess it's just nice to be able to scrutinize this a little bit and pick where we want to go with our lineups.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another place that I'm really struggling with here is figuring out the pivot in the McCarthy range. So I know that you like Patrick Rogers,
Cam Davis.
The problem I have is that in this kind of like lineup build that I'm in right now, I've kind of maxed out my dollars, so it's kind of tough for me to go up. I can't go up without moving a second piece, basically.
So you're maxed money completely?
Right. And so one, I don't like that, and so I'm thinking about where I need to change in order to make that better for me. But I'm struggling with that with Scheffler because he is, you know, quite expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we want to pivot and pivot down, then I think given that we want somebody that can get hot with the putter, or that is a pretty good putter here and can get even hotter with it, as well as, you know, show some ability to pop, I think the guy right below him and Charles Schwartzel is the best pivot. He's also the projected lowest owned guy in the area. He's in pretty decent form. We know he popped at the 3M. He was pretty solid at the Safeway, the top 25 finish. I actually think Schwartzel is a pretty good pivot this week.
So do you think, okay, so and then we're filling, I think Straka is another guy that's kind of like a boomer bust guy, but he
absolutely,
but he's also very good with the putter, not excellent, but he is very good. So I like having him there. I'm kind of liking where this is all ending up here. This is all very helpful. I mean, like, how often did you say, like, would you say, like, you went, like, crazy, not crazy, but, like, you're like, all right, well, I'm, like, going with, like, the riskiest lineup I have. So if you have 20 lineups, did you make, like, that, like, four of your lineups, eight of your lineups? Like, I mean, because you're obviously, like, higher on the risk profile.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm never picking players just because I think they'll make the cut, I guess. I'm trying to pick the guy with the highest upside and the highest scoring ability in every single range, wherever I have to go to that range from. So I'm always going to pick unless somebody completely speaks to me, like, you know, Cam Davis just spoke to me this week. I think he's been in great form, made a lot of cuts in a row. And so I was going to play Cam Davis in my lineups no matter what. And then my pivots were always going to be off him for that range. If I find that guy, I lock them in. If I find then I go to the top because I want my, you know, if nobody else from that mid range, I go, oh, they're going to win the tournament like I think Cam Davis can this week. Then I'm going to go to the top and I'm going to pick the guys at the top that I think give me the best value and win equity. And then from there, I'm just filling in the spots, but I'm always filling it in with the guy I think's going to win the best or have the best chance to win. So I don't want to say that, like, I'm like searching for risk. I'm just saying, like, I'm never going like, oh, so-and-so has made, you know, 4 out of the last 6 cuts, but I don't think they're as good as so-and-so. So I'm going to play the guy that's made the most cuts. That's kind of where I'm saying, like, I'm willing to take on the guy that, you know, maybe has the higher variance, like Doc Redman, but like 2 of his last 3 finishes are top 3s, as opposed to, you know, Adam Long, who, yeah, he popped at the US Open and he's been playing really good golf, but I think he doesn't have quite as high upside as Doc Redman does if they both play their absolute best this week.
Got it. Now, the last question I'll ask you is, because this is, I'm struggling with this, particularly with this build, and I'm not really sure where to fix that particular problem, but I'm struggling with not being able to move up or down because of my dollars. And I don't like that, because I would like to move up from Fratelli to grab Burns and something like, or, you know, or something like that. So would you say, in this cascading effect, would you rather just modify your base lineup in order to where you have that mobility to go up or down with every player on your board? Or would you just say, no, I'm going to just modify 2 players in order to make that happen?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it depends on how confident you are in your core. If you find 6 guys in ranges that you really, really like, then I would say make your core 6 guys. I don't know that we're going to have that every single week. And so if you don't, then make your core 4 guys and be willing to change 2 if the price tells you you need to change 2 to get to where you need to be. So I would say it depends on the confidence you're feeling. It seems like you're not enamored with the, you know, bottom 7,000 range, where I think there are guys that provide value in that upper 6,000 range with Schenk, Davis, so-and-so. So I think
I'm almost to the point where I kind of like the pairing 3 of these cheaper guys of like Poston, Tringali, Ventura, or Poston, Gordon, Ventura, all in a lineup, honestly. And maybe that's what I need to do instead of having McCarthy. And then I can pivot to McCarthy off of Poston, and that allows me to go up from Fratelli to Burns or something like of that, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I think that if you want that flexibility and you're doing the cascading lineups and you want to be able to move $400 or $500 without having to move more than one person, I think if you can provide yourself with enough exposure to the guys you want to provide yourself exposure to by going down in value, like say you want some Denny McCarthy exposure, maybe you don't want at all like 18 lineups of Denny McCarthy exposure, maybe you're okay with only taking 2 lineups, so you have 10% of your rosters, and so then you can move down to, you know, to somebody that lets you do, I guess anybody lets you do it if your money's maxed out with McCarthy in your lineup, but that just provides you with roster flexibility
Or the other way I could do it, I guess, is I know that I'm not, unless I go up to Munoz, but I don't think I will. I'm thinking of almost making just like Scheffler in every one of my lineups and then pivoting down from maybe from Burns to Fratelli, and then I'll like split between Scheffler, Burns, Scheffler, Fratelli, and then pivot off of all the other guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you feel that confident and you're a top, right, then I think that's fine. If you're fine taking the exposure of 10 Burns lineups and 10 Fratelli lineups because you like both those guys enough, then that's a great way to do it, to give yourself roster flexibility in the bottom. Because regardless of what you're doing in that particular, you know, 20 entry, whatever 20 entry you're doing, you're going to be heavy on those guys because they're in 50% of your lineups compared to the field. Right.
Okay. Yeah. This is good. I'm glad we talked through it, and I think it provides insight to, you know, to our listeners here about what kind of choices you're having to make, you know, whenever you're doing these sorts of things. You know, we can just quickly before we move on to the odds here. You know, is there? Let's name like a guy from every range, 9K and up, 75 to 9, 75 below, of who you would avoid. So
sure.
So for my, I'll go first since I put you on the spot there. So from 9,000 up, the guy that I'm going to avoid, you know, we talked about him at the beginning, I'm struggling playing Corey Connors, especially whenever there's a lot of guys in his ownership range that I think are lower owned than him and are going to be and are better than him.
Yeah, Corey Connors is an easy fade. It's the easy choice above $9,000. The tournament we expected him to do well at, and he should have done well at, was the U.S. Open. He even missed the cut there. He's not in good form right now. And in a place, especially we talk about this all the time with guys that are elite ball strikers, bad putters, when it turns into a minus 18, minus 20 contest, they're just not as likely to win it because they're not going to sink as many putts unless they get red hot with the putter. And it's just not really in his DNA to do that.
Agreed. For the next grouping, I'm really trying to find someone that I think is like highly owned, and I don't really understand it. And for me this week, that person, Berkeley, think about it. Okay. Sorry about that. The next guy that I don't really understand why the high ownership is Lucas Glover.
Yeah, I guess it's his ball striking for people. I mean, he gains a ton of strokes off the tee with his irons. Again, not in phenomenal form. I know he finished 17th at the U.S. Open.
But before that, three missed cuts in a row, and then barely made the cut. And then he missed the cut here last year, although he has a 39th, a 5th, and a 14th. But I don't know. Like, 14% of people like him that much. And I don't really think he has an opportunity to win this tournament. I don't really get it, especially whenever you're talking, you know, we have guys like Cam Davis, Patrick Rogers, McCarthy all around him. I don't really understand that number.
Yeah, there are two guys I guess I'm going to avoid in the Corey Connors sort of, you know, frame of mind up here. Sergio Garcia, why is he 8,600? He's missed three out of his last four cuts, finished 66th at the Wyndham in a tournament that, you know, wasn't a ton of high-end talent. There were good players there, but not a ton of high-end talent. I know he's lead off the tee. He's just a miserably bad putter. And then I'm going to say the same for Emiliano Grillo. I know his form's been a little bit better, and he's making cuts right now, but that's all he's doing. He's not really giving you much more outside of that for $8,800.
Can't disagree with you there. And then this bottom group, I don't know. I mean, there's not, like, a particular person I would avoid. Actually, I wouldn't even avoid him. I was just kind of looking. I was surprised. I was like, why is Cameron Percy, like, 11.5% projected ownership? But he's finished 8th and 23rd, and he's on a course horse. So good form, good there. I might make him a little pivot there in that little quartet that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, he and Carlos Ortiz are your course horses if you're about that life this week.
So I think the person that I'm gonna be fading, despite the fact that I may be starting with two Texas Longhorns in my lineups, I have to fade the other Texas Longhorn here, Jonathan Vegas. Missed cut, 52nd, missed cut, missed cut, missed cut the last time he was here. So all he does is drive the ball well. He's not in good form. He's not being accurate on his approach shots. Hasn't shown the ability to get hot with the putter. So I think he's someone that might have some ownership to him that I'm going to be looking to avoid.
Yeah, I think that's a fair decision to make there. Johnny Vegas has just been a bad form. Two guys, again, mostly for bad form as well, but they're bigger names that I think, you know, could garner some ownership when their prices get this cheap. I would not have anything to do with Brant Snedeker, and I would not have anything to do with Keegan Bradley this week. Keegan is his game is just terrible, and then, you know, Brant, we know he can get hot with the putter, and he can really pop with irons, but we just haven't seen it in such a long time from him that I don't feel confident that it has a chance of happening this
week.
When
was the last time he played well? Was it in... He had, like, one tournament last year. It was, like, either the Wyndham...
He finished top 10 at the Safeway last year.
Yeah, it was, like, one of those random tournaments, or the other one I was thinking was in Hilton Head. But yeah, it's been a while since he's popped. I can't disagree with any of those choices there. Moving on to the odds here. The prices, obviously Scheffler is a heavy favorite at plus 900, but that to me is still crazy whenever we get guys like JT and Loaded Fields at like plus 750. I don't know. I feel like you got to do it. I mean, I feel confident that he's going to win this weekend. You talked about a couple guys that were outperforming their DraftKings prices. Cam Davis, even Sam Burns. He's the fourth favorite, and he's not the fourth price golfer. Let's see.
Patrick Rogers is a little bit better than his DraftKings price. It's weird that Carlos Ortiz isn't, given his course history.
Yeah, 55.
I think that's a bit surprising.
I think it's worth playing, honestly. I wouldn't play him at DraftKings because he might kill you, but I don't have a problem with that. I see 55-1.
Yeah. Keith Mitchell is 6,600. He's at 95-1, which is a pretty good line. Or a pretty high price line for a guy that, is priced as low as he is in DraftKings. I think I got Davis for 110-1. He opened at like 200-1. He just won twice on the Corn Ferry Tour. If you can raise a trophy at this level, it means something to me. Davis Riley. So he's 110. That's what I got him at. So I think that's a pretty solid price for him.
No, absolutely. I think Zhang's price is a little higher than what the people around him are. JT Poston is another guy where his price is a little higher than the people around him. So there's some guys definitely that I like in this area. I think I definitely do like the Poston price at 70-1. Adam Shank 80-1. I think that's good value there.
Oh yeah, I also have Adam Shank
money. Yes,
out in the interwebs. Right
so
now.
I think so. So I think I think that and then maybe. I like the guy. I just don't, as we were kind of sifting through this, Brian Harman at 33-1, he's in good form. Again, anyone can win these tournaments. I don't know. There's something about him where I don't see him as like a winner. He seems safe.
Yeah, he's safe. He's not the guy that I ever look at and go, I'm going to take him in this range because he can win a tournament. You know, the number that perplexes me a little bit as we look is Corey Connors. He's 33-1. He's with Munoz, he's with Benny. He's better odds than Redmond or lower odds than Redmond to win the tournament. And I find that very interesting. I also find Siwoo Kim, who's 8,400 at 38-1. That's a really good price. Or really low short money to win the tournament. So I think both those guys are pretty interesting. I will say with Scottie Scheffler, this is pretty cool. His best odds to win a tournament prior to this, wherever you're seeing him right now, it could be anywhere from 10 to 13, I think I've seen, were 25 to 1 to win this tournament last year. And so it is crazy the run he has been on leading up to this to move his odds all the way down to 11-1. He's just a phenomenal golfer. And I think it's tough to play somebody who isn't, like JT, Rom, DJ, Rory at prices like this, but you're right. He's by far the best player in the field.
Who do you, who would be is your favorite of these above 50-1 odds guys to win?
Above 50-1? I think my favorite number to play is Davis Riley at 110.
Okay.
I don't know much about him, but outside of the fact that he consistently posts pretty solid finishes, including two wins.
Oh, he's a bomber.
On tour. He's a bomber.
He absolutely murders the golf ball.
And then I think McCarthy and Ventura both at 80-1 are interesting numbers, along with Mitchell's 95-1. So those would be my core of high odds guys I play.
Yeah, I felt like 2 years ago, Mitchell was a guy that could go out and win a tournament like this. But, I just don't know anymore. I feel like no one has seen that win equity in him anymore. And I wonder, he hasn't really popped in a super long time. But, except for he played really well at the PGA, right?
Yeah, he was in the final group with Tiger and played pretty well. I think he only ended up finishing high 30s, low 40s, but it was still, better than Keith Mitchell's played.
Yeah, and it was really surprising because it's not the type of course that he does well on. So I don't know. I'm looking through all these odds. I don't know. I don't know what my favorite guy is. I think JT Poston, I guess, would be my favorite. But I don't feel like a guy like how we felt for Munoz last year. I don't see a guy like that.
Yeah, I think that's my Cam Davis this year. Okay. I feel pretty passionately that he can go. We used our first one and done of the season on him, and unfortunately, he didn't play great. He just made the cut and struggled on the weekend, but. I think he and Sam Burns are going to win a tournament before it's all said and done.
Absolutely.
And probably sooner rather than later. So their numbers at 24, 45, love them both. Love Doc at 37. And that's probably where I'm going to be doing most of my dancing this week in the betting market. Actually, I know it is because I've already done it.
Solid enough. Yeah, so we'll go to our Mickelson, our baby draw. I mean, obviously mine's Scheffler, which, you know, I do think has a fair amount of risk because he's just been off for so long. But, you know, I just trust the guy, you know. I mean, he's earned a lot of credibility over the last 3 months of golf where he's just been excellent.
Three out of his last five starts have been top five finishes, and that was at the PGA and the Tournament of Champions, where he was actually second to aggregate, scored a par. And then his other two tournaments were at a World Golf Classic, he finished 15th, and at the BMW, he finished 20th. Scottie Scheffler is playing as good a golf as anybody in the world up until this point. That's a hot take, but that's also facts.
And my draw... I think my draw is JT Poston. Like, I keep looking at him, and the more I look at him and, like, what he brings to this type of tournament, the more I can't ignore him. And I'm feeling more and more confident in his ability to do well at this tournament.
I like it. That was not somewhere that I was planning to go this week.
Me either.
I certainly buy your reasoning, and I'm honestly pretty into it. I guess my Mickelson play, I'm going to go with, I guess I have two, Davis Riley. I have quite a bit of him invested in my lineups. I'm going to bet on him a little bit. And then because you've pointed out his general inconsistencies lately, Doc Redman, seems like a boom or bust kind of guy. I'm hoping he booms this week. Baby draw, I guess, ends up being like Patrick Rogers. He's actually between Carlos Ortiz, you know, Cameron Davis and Lucas Glover eating up most of the projected ownership, along with Denny McCarthy in that area. He ends up coming in at 13%. And so I guess that ends up being my baby draw, because I'm going to be probably heavier on him than the field is. I'm definitely going to be heavier on him than the field is. And then my absolute fade for the week, again, it's just Corey Connors. I don't think there's any reason to play him. I think the 9% of people that are projected to play him, oof, they're in for a treat.
I don't really disagree with you there. I don't know what to say other than I think I just completely agree with you.
So you're going to say Scottie Scheffler wins the tournament?
Yes.
Okay.
What?
Since you took chalk, can I have two picks?
Go for it.
Cam Davis or Sam Burns?
I mean, I'll be playing them for sure in some capacity, so I hope you're right.
I don't know who. It feels like one of those guys. I really want Doc to win a tournament. I also really want Cousin Burns to win a tournament. So if any of those three guys pull it out, I'll be extremely happy, and not just because I won a bunch.
Yeah, and you know, and the more I think about it, it's like these, you know, someone big, someone random just won the tournament, and so I feel like a more established person is going to win it this weekend.
Yeah, it definitely could happen. I'm excited to sit down and watch this weekend for sure. I think it's going to be fun. I love to watch Scottie Scheffler golf, so I'm excited to have him back. I was really disappointed when he didn't get to play in the U.S. Open. I'm glad he's healthy. Didn't have too much problem with COVID, obviously, if he's back in 3 weeks. And I'm excited. I'm excited for Sungjae to be back. You know, Will Z has been fun to watch. He's finished top 10 in both of his, you know, PGA starts this year. I think there's Sam Burns, Doc Redman. There's a lot of young talent that's going to be out there this week that's really fun to get excited about.
Absolutely. I don't think I have anything else with me here. I feel pretty good about this. You know, the more we talk about it, I'm in a solid place with this group of guys, and now it's just kind of working it out and figuring out, you know, what guys fit with what lineups and all that kind of stuff. So, but I feel good about this. I think we're going to have a good weekend.
Yeah, this is an interesting thought experiment we did this weekend, where we sort of crafted spaces in a lineup as opposed to just going down and who do we like, who do we dislike? Well, this is why we're playing these guys and that sort of stuff. It was a fun path to go down. I'm glad I trusted you on my spiritual daily fantasy golf journey this week. Jesus Take the Wheel is very popular.
One fateful night.
Amongst one fateful night in Vegas. So yeah, I'm excited. I think we're in for for another good week. Hopefully, you know, for you, we'll be in the tournament at the end of it again on Sunday with a chance to pop and make some money. It should be a blast.
It's always fun, you know, being in it at the end, needless to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, got anything else?
Nah, I think we're good to sign off.
All right. Take it away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Podcast this week. If you enjoyed what you heard, please like, subscribe, rate us, leave a comment, whatever you feel comfortable doing to support the show. And we also appreciate that very much. There are a lot of podcasts probably out there for your daily fantasy attention, and we're glad you turned to us. Wish you all happy investing this weekend. I hope you'll tune in again next week so we can help make sure you have the right clubs in the bag. Thanks again. Stay safe.